Okay, Jed, what's coming?
Red ball, double homicide, one male, one female. Killers male, white, 40s. Agatha nailed the time frame at 8:04 a.m. The twins are a little fuzzy on that, so we'll need confirmation. Location still uncertain. Remote witnesses are plugged in. This will be case number 1108.
I can't just give you new irises. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Huh?
Whoops. Hey, everybody, it's Film Sack. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of entertainment for all mankind, episode 211. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Brian. He was fired as a precog for pooping in the pool, Dunaway.
Don't worry, I can flush it. Have you ever hated something for so long you forgot why you even hated it to begin with? Yeah, I never forgot. Screw you guys. Hello, this is Pre-Crime Division. How may we help you? Sir, that is not how it works. Why don't you just tell me what you want? No, our precogs are not running. Oh, because if they were, we would have to catch them. Clever. Sir, we are dispatching a cop on horseback to your location now. Should be there in about a week.
Awesome.
Look, you can't... Okay, we'll get to all that. We'll get to all your plot holes later.
You're running.
Also with us, Randy, get out your puke sticks, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott.
Brian.
Brian.
Yeah, so I've inspected my crew's work here, and I gotta say, this is the best installation we've ever done. And as you know, we only work for government agencies. I'm just gonna need you to sign here and initial here. Now, I know we've got a strict discretion policy, but I just have to ask, why do you want this amazing new 3D printer we've just sold you to print out balls? I mean, every other customer we've ever had was using it to print out the thing right above the balls.
Yeah, the penis. Gotcha there. All right, and finally, Brian, recovering Neurowin addict Ibbot.
So you thought this was a movie about solving crimes before they happen and the sociopolitical ramifications that we face as a society for that moment of choice that happens right before a crime is committed? No. It's obviously a film about Tom Cruise's character and how he gets physically molested, kissed, and groped by women everywhere he goes.
See, did you see what's her name in the background on the bus there with right behind Cameron Crowe there? Did you see the...
is she in there?
Yeah, what's her name from Vanilla Sky with him? I can't think of her name.
Cameron Diaz?
Cameron Diaz is the one right behind him in the little Google Glass looking headset she's wearing.
I did not even catch that.
I looked it up, and while I'm reading the trivia, that scene's on. I had to back it up and make sure. Sure enough, there she is, hanging out.
Whoa,
that's crazy. Wow.
Did you have to put your hand up, like, with a glove and, like, put it in, like, make weird little
to rewind gestures? Netflix. Yeah.
Maybe a little, maybe some of those arm chop things that kind of step through each step.
Yeah. Right. You're gonna have a hard time with all that tech, aren't you? You're going to miss this whole episode. It's going to struggle with the VR tech. I thought that stuff was cool and awesome, and we'll get to all that in a minute. Scott Fletcher's got to pipe in first. He's got to tell us what the hell this movie's about. It's Minority Report, and he has the scoop.
Minority Report. John Anderton is a top pre-crime cop in the late 21st century, when technology can predict crimes before they're committed. But Anderton becomes the quarry when another investigator targets him for a murder charge. Can Anderton prove his innocence? Well, can he? God, I hope so.
Little improv on the end.
That was pretty good. That was better than the ending of this movie.
This movie, which was directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
You know his work from such hits as AI and Hook. All right.
That's right. I declare this as post-AI, which is about the time I stopped liking Spielberg directed movies.
We are going to have words, man. We are going to have words.
I declare a thumb war.
Yeah, for sure. written by, or at least a short story by Philip K. Dick, which I've read. For comparison's sake, I wanted to know what the big differences are. And then, honestly, the one big main difference, well, there's a few, but one of the big differences is that John Anderton in that story is a middle-aged fat bald guy.
Yeah. Right.
And, Tom Cruise would not do that until Tropic Thunder. So,
but he certainly did it well.
Yeah, he did all right. You got your Tom Cruise, you got your Colin Farrell, you got your Samantha Morton, and your Max von Sydow there, who's been in a couple of film sacks before.
And you, the other big difference was the precogs. In the book, they are like mutated, like blob people.
Yeah, they're not humans. Movie, they're
really?
And no, they don't even like talk clearly. They have a machine that translates their babbling into what the inspectors, the detectives have to go through.
Now look,
we didn't talk terribly clearly in this one either.
Yeah, that's true. They know how to yell run. They enunciate run really well. But the thing with the changes here, I don't see them as egregious. If there are any complaints about source material being changed around, one only need to look at any number of Philip K. Dick adaptations to see everything be changed all the time. And
everything be changed.
We have beloved. I mean, everyone loves Blade Runner to the point of excess. That movie's nothing like that book.
Very
different. What they did retain here, which I'm glad they did, is the film noir aesthetic of it all. They tried very hard to kind of maintain that kind of look and feel and sound and dialogue. Yeah, it's like an old 40s mystery crime book, movie, novel.
Right, book, novel,
and,
pulp fiction.
It works for me a lot. I like this movie a lot. We've talked about it before. We've talked about The Divide. So I guess Dunaway, because this is kind of a, I don't know, I feel like this is a very special episode of Blossom here.
I feel like we've been doing this for 5 years leading up to this episode.
Yeah, really,
I
agree. Exactly. I really do. All other episodes have led
to
this.
if you did what I suggested and you went back and listened to every episode of Extra Life Radio to find the one where this movie is reviewed, you'd actually be going back like 9 years.
Yeah. Almost when this movie was released.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this came out in 2003, right?
Right.
03, 02, whatever.
Right. We probably reviewed it like in 2006 or something. It was
05, 06. Pretty close. Yeah. A lot closer than it is now. So you hated it then and you hate it now, maybe more so. Did you end up watching it again, or did you slough this and not do it?
Screw you guys. I'm not watching Scrap. I actually watched it 3 times.
What?
No lie. Watched it 3 times because I am thorough, but
you didn't read. You didn't watch this for 3 times. No,
I did.
Way.
I kept falling asleep. I watched it 3 times.
Oh my god!
If I had to hear, all right. Okay. People need to know there's one basic reason. Well, there's a few reasons, but there's one overall reason why I never really care for Minority Report, and that is the ending. The ending has always just ruined this movie for me. And it was the whole reason why I hate it back in the day. But I loved it. When I saw this at the theater, I remember how excited I was to go see it. And I remember the first hour and a half of how much I enjoyed it, even though it was a little bit, you know, a little bit hackneyed, a little bit of that whole, there's a cop and he's got a broken family and, you know, he's blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I was okay with that up until about act three. And I was like, okay, I'm out. This is
okay. Wait, now to explain what about the ending? Because this show doesn't we don't concern ourselves with spoilers. We can lay it out. What happened?
Spoiler. Okay, what happens in the end is it just totally falls apart, because all the way up until then we're kind of moving towards this very common goal. I mean, it's really rich in symbolism. And they explain everything. Oh my god, the explaining is just
awesome.
It is obscene.
No, it's
especially
not.
When it comes to explaining the technology.
It's great.
It is fine.
Wood grain is, you cannot duplicate wood grain. It's a great idea.
Oh my god. Don't even get me started on that. It started falling apart for me. All the stuff that happened prior to the ending started falling apart once I saw the ending. And the ending is this. The ending just gets confused. There is no clear direction in where it wants to end. Mm-hmm. And even the primary bad guy flip-flops. Within like 2 scenes, he flip flops, and it's never really explained. And
this is the worst explanation as to why you don't like a movie I've ever heard.
The ending ruined. No, it's not, because I'll tell you what.
Right.
You will.
It's not like a giant dragonfly came down and ate them all, and that's the ending. It ended pretty much consistent with the way the whole movie ran.
No, it did not.
Explain it.
It did not end up consistently at all. He was heading on this very specific path, this very specific path to find out what's going on, which was to find out who was framing him.
Right.
Who was setting him up. And everything was a very singular motivation. And then all of a sudden at the very end, the individual who was revealed to be the bad guy, the big chief, the big guy, the big kahuna.
Ming the Merciless.
The Ming the Merciless. He turns out to like flip flop. He's like, he's willing to murder people. He's willing to do anything it takes up until the very end. And then he goes, meh, I don't know. Maybe not. Who knows? Maybe I'm going to kill myself. No, I'm going to kill you. Nah, I don't know what I'm going to do. Forget it.
That has always been your big problem with that movie is that he turned the gun on himself at the end.
It devalues everything up until that point.
I don't see how it does. All right, Randy.
I have to step in here.
Please get in.
The thing there, that's a perfect example of what's wrong with the movie. The thing where the two people come up close to each other and the gun's between their bellies and the shot goes off and you don't know what happens. That is perfect for film noir. What is not perfect for film noir is sci-fi. They don't go together. And the reason why is because sci-fi is ultimately optimistic. It's ultimately this look forward at something that's possible. And unless you're going to make a negative, pessimistic, bleak future, if you try to go glom film noir onto it, you keep falling back to the optimistic. This movie just keeps doing it. It's like, oh, we're going to put this guy in the shadows. We're going to have this be a big procedural thing. And then the gun goes off and we're like, oh, wow, what just happened? And instead of ending the stinking movie, it goes on. And we're going to grow her hair back.
It's going to be a happy ending.
20th time, by the way, in this movie where an editor could have saved the whole damn thing. And there just was no editing. It's like every little thing. They take him you get to know the character via exposition, right? He goes into his loft with his secret little smoke, and he puts on the same video he watches every stinking night and goes through the same routine.
Horrible technology.
Horrible stuff around him, but that needed to be about 15 seconds long.
Yeah.
And it was 5 minutes long. And like, it's like, okay, but that's what film noir does, right? It sets you up and it makes you stare at this bleak existence for a long time. Only the thing is, it's Tom Cruise and you're looking at his teeth and they're horrible.
Yeah, but listen, I have two theories here. One, I think Brian had some nitpicks from way back in the day that have just burrowed themselves in and created a giant vine strangling him. And then I think Randy is picking a side here for entertainment value because he sees it, and I appreciate it. I see the value too. But here's what I'm getting at: the idea that film noir cannot be married with sci-fi is crazy. It happens all the time.
Blade Runner is a fantastic.
It is soaked in it. But you could also argue Blade Runner did not have a very happy ending, and I agree with that. And I agree that I don't always need my endings happy, and I know that Spielberg is sometimes famous for this.
Please don't call Blade Runner hard sci-fi. It just happens to take place when and where it had.
Ooh, that'll get some comments. That'll get some stuff on the blog.
I don't know if I'd call it hard sci-fi, but what determines hard sci-fi?
An attempt to explain every little thing. This is exactly how these precogs work and how this machine works and how we get this.
The version of Blade Runner with the narration does that, but the other versions don't.
Yeah, good point. But there's also this movie. Got points for me because they took the time to say, was that ball going to fall? Yeah. But you caught it. Well, yeah. But it was going to fall. It was inevitable, right? Like these moral arguments that would come out of these great explanations. I love that stuff.
Scott.
So you like it when somebody takes a hammer and gives it to you and says, here, hammer yourself in the head a bunch of times.
No.
That's what they're doing.
What does that have to do with anything?
Oh, my God.
I just have to say, I want Scott to hear me say, I really enjoyed watching this movie this week. I love the score. I love the cinematography. I don't remember if we were saying this before the show or after we started recording, but this is post Steven Spielberg sort of taking up residency in Stanley Kubrick's brain.
Yep.
And bam, I loved it. I'm watching this thing like this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in a sci-fi film. And what I'm saying is, to really appreciate that, I needed an editor to come along and take it away from me before I got tired of what I was seeing.
Mm.
And that just happened again and again and again.
Never felt this way, ever. Now, that could all come down just to personal preference or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm also a guy who trusts in Spielberg's vision most of the time, and his endings work for me. They're fine. I don't mind them. They're fine. He makes a movie. It ends. Yeah. Does every movie we have to make in this world have to have shit at the end? No.
No. No, not at all. But this movie has a literal sunrise. This movie has these sad prisoners being put in a cabin where they're just in a different kind of prison.
How dare he do such a thing?
Like, well, they get books. They get to enjoy their life. And
there's
and
closure for those things. If they were mindless blobs like in the book, well, then fine. Just put them in the dumpster. Who cares? But these are human beings with feelings and thoughts and whatever. And it's and there's a big effort at least in the film's case, to humanize them, to take her out of the pool, out of the temple, they called her, out of the milk,
but
get her away from that nervous little Jewish guy, and actually give a life to that lady and the other twins.
You mean the dolphin keeper?
Yes, that guy. Who's a trope? I know, he's a trope.
Unnecessary. And we use the word unnecessary a lot, because he was unnecessary. Tim Blake Nelson's character was unnecessary.
Oh!
Peter Stormare's backstory was unnecessary.
No!
There's so much unnecessary in this movie.
Tim Blake Nelson is unnecessary is the last words I'll ever speak in my entire life. Not just because he's cool and interesting, but because
so enjoyable.
I love the tropes that they have in this movie are tropes, and they're absolutely tropes. But I don't look at them as, oh, you guys, you got lazy with that. I look at them and go, no, I want this in my kind of crime story with gum-chewing gumshoe inspector who's
totally
going to figure it out.
Chewing.
Yes, of course he was. And all that stuff, totally, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with the weird tone of the film, which, by the way, was achieved by bleaching the film footage. It's crazy.
Yes, yes.
Crazy.
It's a beautiful. Don't get me wrong. If you ask, was the technical prowess there to make a fantastic movie? Absolutely. Did it look beautiful? Oh, my gosh, yes. Was the music fantastic? It reminded me of Indiana Jones so much.
It's really good. You should be complaining about sentient plant life. That's what you should complain about.
sentient plant life actually looked pretty cool. And that, actually, one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie is when he goes visits the old lady out in there. And the reason why is because she is explaining stuff, but it is forwarding the story. She is actually moving the story forward, whereas everybody else explaining, I'm like, why did you just explain that to me for 5 minutes? It has nothing to do with anything.
I didn't need to know any of that.
Okay, fine. So you're saying that she helped forward the story. I agree with you.
Lois Smith plays the best part in the movie.
She's good. She was almost Meryl Streep. Another trivia there. She does propel the thing forward. Absolutely true. Here's the thing, though. She also helps establish why what old man McGillicuddy does in the end is a plausible thing. She sets things up and tells us enough backstory about how they were the two basically parents of the project. These were their children. Right. And this was their thing. And to know, get to have that much more information about why they split and why she went off and lives in solitude and why he stuck to his guns and kept pushing the program forward says a lot about his psychology and why ultimately he had to be the one to go.
Do you know what worked better than that scene? It was better when Darth Vader picked up the Emperor and threw him, because you got to see a few minutes of contemplation. You got to see his mind work and go, holy shit, I'm a bad guy. I need to fix this. I've really screwed up. None of that here. Just the guy walks out and goes, how's it going, Tom Cruise? And he just shoots himself in the face.
He didn't come out and go, how's it going, Tom Cruise? And
he
then
pretty
shoot
much
himself.
Did.
He came out. He had all the lead up. We had precognitive proof that he was going to kill. Mm-hmm. The intent was there. So once again, they hang that intent out there and they show how intent can be changed. Now, before, when you had the dude in the hotel room who was just put up to look like a molester child dude.
Right.
And instead wanted him to shoot him and ends up getting himself shot and thrown out the window, just meant that the precog saw the same exact scene but interpreted it wrong. The kind of moral ambiguity that brings up is fascinating stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it really makes you think, like, No. They are sure this science works. They are sure that it's great. Having all three there, and then the Minority Report happens occasionally. But for the most part, you get them all on the same page. Even the first scene, even the opener we played on today's show, had this description of the case where the twins are a little unsure, but she's got the location. So there's even like disagreement in the temple there about who, when it's happening. That's interesting because they're all solid on it. They got a program. You stand in front of the judge and the witness. You pull out the ball, standard procedure. Like, that stuff
is don't like, don't you just throw the ball like there's standard procedure?
It's
don't
great.
Give me that
no,
crap.
But it's great because that whole thing establishes that this is how the law works, and we are so sure of its effectiveness.
Right.
That we have got a system for this. And then the system gets thrown in your face because then you realize, oh, wait, they saw this guy's murder, but Tom Cruise didn't shoot him. The guy shot himself and got blown out the window and died.
Right.
Well, it's interpretive. It keeps bringing up this interpretation. And then based on talking to the lady with the plant pet she had, then that pushed that even more forward. And then you see him shoot himself once again, changing the interpretation of the events of these precogs and that none of this can be trusted. Like, that's just... That is okay. Really interesting filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. It is interesting filmmaking, and it is so confusing. But he has time to explain technology. But I mean, this is so rich. I mean, even all the way down to the fact that everybody that gets shot in the chest gets shot on the wrong side. It's not on the heart. So the question is, are we even watching reality, or are we watching some kind of alternate reality of this whole thing?
Well, he didn't get shot. What's his name getting shot? That wasn't about him getting shot in the heart. That was about him getting shot.
Every time somebody got shot in the chest, they were shot on the wrong side.
It doesn't matter what side. He didn't die. He slumped down to the floor. An old man fart face came up and shot him square in the head. That was the end of that guy. Right. You're seeing the little stuff and thinking it has some big impact here. That's nothing. So he got shot in the left side. Who cares? He wasn't dead yet anyway. If he'd have got him in the heart, he would have died.
Why did everybody get shot in the left side then?
Well, what does it matter?
I really want to know what Brian Abbott thinks of this movie.
I'm having such a good time just sitting and watching this.
He's like, the parents are fussing. Forget this crap.
It's going to be a lot of lead up to nothing because I neither hate. Well, I won't say I love
this
film.
What just happened?
Really
oh, my gosh.
I really enjoyed watching again.
I think it's his internet hung right when you
lagged.
Said
okay
because you went like, I neither and then
but
it went,
I knew what he was gonna say
that
so
was
it's
amazing
okay.
Oh can you
okay. Yeah, you're good
listen back because I had no idea what it sounded like on this side but I neither hated nor loved the film. I mean I liked it and I really enjoyed watching it again a lot more actually than I was expecting to because I wasn't expecting a lot of the technology bits, the hey here's what we're gonna be able to do in the future stuff to hold up, and there's some silliness with that. You know, little tiny things you could say, okay, so they've got this ability to wave their hands and make, you know, navigate through these memories, or not memories, these future projections like it's a film and zipping back and forth and going click, 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 click to figure out the kids on a freaking merry-go-round. Yet to transfer information from a computer in the same room, they have to load it onto a glass plate, walk it from one machine to the other.
Yeah, there's like lack of networking is a little bit weird given that in 2003 we had that all figured out already.
You know, so, I thought about that because it's like, okay, you can't show it on the main screen because you can't have any type of network connectivity to it. I mean, that just makes natural sense that you would have to bring a physical object.
That machine has got to be completely isolated from the network, so nobody can jack into. Look at you defending the
full
film.
Yeah, look at this. Whoa, the shoe has flipped to the other
foot. I'm telling you. This is a fact. This is a fact. People will forgive a slip or a mess up in the beginning of a film. They will not forgive a bad ending, period. Will not forgive a bad ending. I am the case in point.
All right, but back in 2006.
Tell me how you'd end the film then.
Yeah, like, what would you have done?
Oh, my God.
What with the precogs?
Oh, this is what I would do. I would take about 20 minutes less explaining everything else and spend a few more minutes on that final scene and reason why it was such a sacrifice. I mean, if it was more than just, like I said, it was just boom, boom, boom,
it's
quick.
It's so
sober,
easy,
like,
though.
No.
What would he have gained by killing Tom Cruise? He had already, his
oh, no,
entire,
to, no,
hold on,
no,
hold
no.
on. His horrible, lake murder had been played up on giant big screens at the big gala. His right. life, career, and entire thing is now toast. He will now be implicated in the death of Colin Farrell and everybody else involved. He knows the jig is up. The gif is animated. The jig is up, and he is going to do – what else is he going to do? He's going to go out because done.
It's the stuff that happens right after that scene, I think, is what you're talking about, right, Brian, with the Tom Cruise narration, and they're showing the empty pre-crime unit, and he's explaining what happened
Talk
to
Talk about an unnecessary Hollywood ending. He gets back together with his wife.
Exactly.
I wanted that for him, though.
It just – ends there. It's
I'm
like it's
sentimental,
like,
I guess that way.
Yeah, it just goes along as a bit, and then it says, okay, now we're gonna have this stupid after. But that's what it is. It's like it just ends too abruptly with the primary story, and I feel like they had to add on that stupid, tacky other ending to make up for this sudden cutoff. Just bam, cut it off, chop it off right here.
I'm more bothered by the size of Von Sydow's gun. I'm more bugged that looked like a can of, yeah, it came out of a Cap'n Crunch box, not that it was an actual gun that could kill a dude. Sorry, Randy, right. I cut you off.
Yes, generals in the war were a lot smaller than we are today.
They gave their commanding officers gold-plated bullets. I'm like, yeah, and then they sold those bullets, right?
Yeah. Right.
Why would you fire that?
Yeah. Sure, there are plenty of those. Like, why didn't they revoke his access to the building so he couldn't just hold his old eyes up and get in? Like, there's a lot of little things like that. Yeah, I could see. But every movie's full of those things. I think the bigger, like, time travel, this is basically a time travel movie in a lot of ways, okay? Has the same kind of foibles, pitfalls, and potential plot holes. I think, my opinion is, for the record, that they did a pretty good job of having fallbacks on all those kinds of questions.
I disagree.
Give me an example of where they didn't have
a fallback. Okay, the trope of the idiot ball. Give me a trope.
All right, here you go.
Yeah, the idiot ball, right?
Idiot ball is when the only way this plot makes sense is for somebody who not only knows what to do, but is surrounded by people who know what to do, decides to do the wrong thing. And in this case, Tom Cruise's character, John Anderton, gets a conundrum. It's like, you're going to kill somebody you'd never even met in a couple of days. Everybody watching in the room, everybody if he had just gone to a stranger on the street and said, here's my conundrum, they would have said, oh, well, you just go hole up in a hotel room with a guard for 3 days. Mm-hmm. And that's not a problem.
Yeah, but nobody in the room. So you have the lady going, what am I looking at? It's because she's a dumb politician who doesn't know Jack. The other guy, now I will give you this. Chick in the bucket in this movie was the judge. He didn't even turn him off. He just was gone suddenly.
Yeah, the second witness did not all of a sudden disappear.
He's the judge. She's the witness, right? She's the congressional witness or whatever they are, and he's the judge. And okay. He was just gone. She says, now what am I looking at? Because this has never happened before, that the guy in there who's running the thing is showing his face and looks like he's doing something terrible on screen. She's just like nonplussed, like, what's going on? Doesn't matter what she thinks anyway, because her suspicions will soon be proven because they're about to set off the alarm and everyone's after him anyway. So I don't think any of that. I don't see how that's a trope. Jewish guy's just like nervous little tropey man himself who gets treated badly by everyone. So since he would treated him nice, he's like, I'll give you a couple minutes.
The trope is the bigger plot driver. It's when a character decides to do the one dumb thing that will get them in all the trouble, when any other option, anything else John Anderton does, completely, there's no plot really. He gets around. But instead, he decides to go barreling headfirst into, I am going to make that thing happen that I just said I can't imagine could possibly happen. And that he is carrying the idiot ball and running with it.
Well, what an exciting film your version would have been, because because the point is, if he doesn't do that, then you don't have a movie. And I put myself in his situation. Yes, it's the movie and everything's extreme, but if you're going, you want to go find out. There's no, no way this is going to happen.
Yeah.
There's no way I kill a guy. I'm a cop. I am a straight up dude, straight shooter as you get in this department. There's no way that's going to be me. And you're going to do all you can to go and make sure it isn't freaking you.
Right. You're not listening to Randy.
You write a completely different story where instead of the idiot ball even being present, he tries his damnedest to avoid falling into the situation and still finds himself in it. That's clever. That's smart. That's why I'm saying this is such a trope.
But I so disagree, because he got there, and when he got into that room and thought he had who he had with him, he held back to prove that it was not inevitable. And then finds out the guy's not even who he says he is, and says he was put up to it, and you have to kill me for my family to be covered, to be safe. That's a great twist, man. And then to have him still die, it's like, no, it kind of is inevitable. It didn't happen the way we thought it was going to, but it kind of still had to happen. Tom Cruise thought he had fixed it. He thought he had solved it. Like, that's an epic moment in movies.
I got to ask Brian Dunaway, do you agree with me this would have been a better movie if he had been spending all that time trying to not get into that situation?
Yeah, but, you know, he's got to run.
So everybody runs.
Everybody runs, except for the big chief who just goes, I'm not going to run at all. We're into the movie now.
What? Anyway. Oh, because he's still hung up on him and his weasel gun. Look.
You'd have to know why. You'd want to know why,
Randy. That was
you'd
the idea. Want to know why. But,
why?
Go ahead.
Well, that's just the thing. He finds out about the existence of these minority report things, right? He goes to the only person alive who knows about these minority report things, except for everybody else who knows. But he,
yeah, but you liked that scene. We've established you liked that scene, though.
I love that scene. I just hate that trope. Right. Where somebody tells you a secret, and then you find out actually lots of other people know that secret. You're just the one person who doesn't know.
Well,
that
two
thing?
People don't know. In her case, I mean, she's really talking about her and Sidehouse. She's not talking about anybody else that I know of, because he's the one that's keeping all this stuff close to the vest and doesn't want it to leak out, because then they'll shut down the department and his baby goes away.
You
and
really she's don't. Like, I'm just, you really don't like this movie being torn apart.
No, I, dude. No. We knew what we were getting into with this one. We knew it'd be one where I think very highly of the film, and it's specifically mostly Dunaway, but you know, others have more issues with it. I'm on the more extreme. This is probably not as good as I think it is side, but there's these like calling it the worst movie of all time, which is what you've said before, Dunaway.
No, I didn't say it was the worst movie of all time. I said, I hate this movie. There's a big difference between I hate this movie and it's the worst movie of all
time. What's the worst movie of all time?
Worst movie of all time.
Yeah, I just wonder if you have one.
That's hard to say, because I think almost all films have value in this according to the amount of effort put into it. So it's really hard to say if there's a... I hold Spielberg to a higher standard because of the available resources he has than I would the people who made like a Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
Wait, only because he has resources available to him?
Yeah. No, that's a very good declaration.
I don't think so.
A movie, if it has potential and it really fails to live up to that potential, is it as bad as a movie, or is it worse than a movie that really didn't go into it? You were not expecting anything to be really good, and you weren't let down. Like Return to the Killer Tomatoes, great example of that.
Right.
With what they had available to them.
What's your excuse?
That's still shitty.
Exactly. It's a shitty movie, but you knew it was going to be shitty from the moment you read the title of the movie.
Right. Even if they tried their very hardest, they were only going to end up with about that movie.
So your point is like Crystal Skull came and you thought, well, all right, well, Crystal Skull it's got all the same people involved. This should have been good.
Exactly.
And it turned out to be utter trash.
It should have, could have easily been good. But yeah.
It is up to most people. Obviously, it's up to the audiences to determine whether a movie's a big hit or whether it's critically acclaimed or whatever. But this is a movie where it's not just me. Like, that thing enjoys high ranks on all sites that rank films, and it's highly user-rated, and it made a ton of money and did really well, and critics loved it. So I don't feel like I'm just this lone guy on an island going, liked that movie. It was real good.
Everybody loves Empire Strikes Back, and trust me, go watch that thing. That's a piece of crap. Like, it's totally cool.
It's totally
cool to like this movie. It's totally cool.
I cannot believe you just said what you said about Empire Strikes Back.
Oh my gosh, that thing has plot holes you could drive an Imperial Star Cruiser through. Well, anyway, with Minority Report though comes Star Trek Into Darkness for Brian Dunaway.
Yes,
we did promise
another movie that I hated.
We promised we'd talk about this, and here's the funny thing. I feel like
are we going to do that now?
I can. Wait, I feel like I can defend this movie less than I would this one. Into Darkness is kind of throwaway entertainment. I will be the first to admit it. It was fun. It's exciting. It's a popcorn movie. But in the end, what am I really retaining from this experience? And really not much. Like, it's not that great. It's okay. It's not wonderful. But you really don't like it. In fact, you put it, is it second behind this movie of your... Because you made a list on Twitter. That's why I'm saying it's your least favorite movie, because you said it on Twitter. You said, Minority Report is my least favorite movie.
Least favorite does not mean crappy movie. That doesn't mean movie.
Where does Retrograde fit on that list?
It's not even on a list. It's like in the 100s. I mean,
because
it's not even
worth putting on the
list. It's not even worth putting on the list.
Exactly. Because it didn't have any potential. You didn't look at the listing for Retrograde and the actors involved with Retrograde and say, oh, this is going to be fantastic. And then, oh my God, it totally didn't live up to that.
No, I didn't spend any time that week going, oh man, I can't wait until Retrograde gets here and I can get my ticket and I can go see it. I can't wait. It's going to be the best movie since, Empire Strikes Back. I didn't think any of that stuff. So,
but you've got Tom Cruise, you've got Steven Spielberg, you've got
big sci-fi
Irish dude,
Colin Farrell.
Another Philip K. Dick movie, which I love Total Recall, and this was was actually like it was going to be the original script for like Total Recall 2, and you know it was going to be there was so much potential here, and that's where it failed me at. And Scott, back to your point of you're not wrong about critically reviewed. This is one of the best critically reviewed movies of 2002. But also, you'll notice that anybody that complained about it also complained about the ending. If there was any complaints, it was about the ending, and that's where I lie at, too. It was probably larger to me.
You have issues with bad endings.
I have great issue with bad endings and movies that wreck movies prior to it, and that's the reason why Toy Story 3 and Star Trek Into Darkness are both on my top three most disliked movies.
And you hate Minority Report more than Into Darkness.
I hate Minority Report so much, man.
It says it in your tweet.
I hate it so much.
It says you hate Minority Report more than Star Trek Into Darkness. Now, I don't know what it is. Right. You're not wrong about some of the tropes. Randy's definitely right about some of these tropes. We're all right about a lot of what we're saying here. I just don't see... There are more plot holes and there are more problems with Looper or a dozen other movies that attempt to do similar things and also attempt a similar, film noir kind of. I mean, Looper is all about that. That thing felt like so
watching
was Brick.
Watching this movie made you think of The Matrix.
Yeah, a little bit.
There was a better one. It made you think of The Fifth Element.
Yeah, a little bit.
They all have way bigger sci-fi problems than this.
Oh, yeah, but like, for sure they do. Fifth Element, dude. We love that movie. We adore it here, but it's got some big problems.
Yeah.
This movie is I think that the bigger the build, the harder the fall for me. Cause there's some scenes in this movie that is just fantastic. And when I started watching it again, I almost did. The reason why my opening was kind of honest because I started watching. I'm like, why did I hate this movie so much? This is actually pretty cool. I mean, we just got a guy that got zapped in the neck with a zap stick and he threw up immediately. I'm like, oh my God, I love that scene. And I think it was just the letdown that destroyed it for me. And Steven Spielberg has got, him and Lucas both, they want to keep going back to the movies they've made prior and destroying them, like taking the guns away from E.T.,
He says he regrets that, though. Unlike Lucas, he says he totally regrets it. He thinks he shouldn't have done it.
Kind of in that same note, on the Wikipedia article for this movie, it talks about how the very ending of the film, like after he talked about the end of pre-crime and did his narration there, and then they showed the pre-cogs in their little cabin. Okay. Then there was like a final prologue.
Yeah.
That talked about how crime and murder shot right back up in Washington, D.C.
Oh, epilogue.
Right.
So you meant.
I'm sorry, epilogue. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Not prologue. Epilogue.
Before, yeah.
You know what? Movie had? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And apparently that was removed. Based on Spielberg's request.
So he took that out.
Insistence,
presumably.
You jackass.
Look, he does have a tendency toward happy endings. I totally get that. He absolutely does. The only ones I can think of, he kind of cheated with Saving Ryan's Privates or Private Ryan because he had this whole movie that was real dark, real. No one's winning this particular war film, and at the end of it, it ends very badly.
Right.
For everybody except for Private Ryan. And how do they solve that with this Spielberg thing you guys are talking about? We have a flash forward again to where he's at Arlington Cemetery and he's there kneeling and crying. And, there is some life after this horror. So even then he kind of does it. I agree that he does, but I'm okay with that being a Spielberg thing to do. He's always chosen to do it. It's not a new thing. It's been this way since the freaking beginning.
Which ending did you enjoy the most in AI? The first or the fifth one?
I liked AI for all the wrong reasons, I think. I don't like it because it's a Spielberg movie or even that what's-his-name had a huge involvement before he died or whatever.
Kubrick.
I like just how weird and disjointed it is. I think the things you probably don't like are the things that intrigue me. And I'm not going to put it into my top 10, but I think AI is kind of fascinating. And there are parts of it.
Which ending is the one where Haley Joel Osment is just left at the bottom of the ocean?
I think that was the final one.
I think that was the last ending. I didn't hate that movie the way everyone else hates it. I think it was all right. I didn't like the Robin Williams hollow character thing.
That was actually my favorite part. I kept thinking about it.
Was.
I actually kept thinking about it today. I enjoyed that scene.
Yeah. While we're talking about endings and movies around the last 20 years. The ending to Inception always comes up. And I thought about it. It's as the credits are rolling in this film, I thought about how Inception, Christopher Nolan would have done this so very different, I hope.
Right.
And you can say all you want that, oh, this is Spielberg being Spielberg, but that, you know, that whole kids will be kids thing doesn't quite work when you end up with a single work of art that has to stand for itself. You want it to be as good as it could have been. And imagine if this movie had ended with some ambiguity, with some mystery, with some question, maybe rapidly, like Inception ends very quickly. Once you realize you're asking a question as the audience, it's over.
Right, right.
You're like, ah, what? And I remember sitting in the movie theater for Inception, and it ended, and everyone in the room groaned because they realized that they had just been left wondering. You know, like this movie.
I'm okay with that.
Well, that's leaving you to interpret that as good or bad.
That.
And a lot of people interpret that as bad. Some people interpret it as good. All I'm saying is I want Nolan to do his movies the way he does them. And I'm okay with Spielberg doing them the way he does them. If he suddenly decides to go all M. Night Shyamalan and have freaking, you know,
Avatar,
whatever. Avatar. What? No, that's what's his name? That's
M. Night Shyamalan. Avatar.
Oh, you're talking about the Airbender deal. The last Avatar. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
The last Avatar.
I didn't see that.
The Bender, The Last Avatar.
What's that called? Airbender, The Last Avatar. That's it.
Yeah.
It is The Last Avatar, you dingleberry.
That's what I know.
All right. But the point is that if you have – I do that a lot. The point is there is no point. The point I'm going to make is I love Christopher Nolan's movies, and I'm with you on that ending. I still say Inception's – if I had to put gun to my head and say, what's your favorite movie of the last decade, that one's right up there.
You know, if they had ended Minority Report with Tom Cruise going into with his halo into his little prison there, I would have been happier than the ending I was served. I prefer leaving a movie going, what the hell? And then spending 2 days thinking about it.
Yeah, but millions of people don't, is what
I'm
getting
at. Well, I didn't say, that's my preference.
Well, I know, but what I'm saying is, if you want to be, there's a reason why Spielberg is the most widely accepted mainstream director of all time. It's because that guy speaks to as many possible voices as he can and never the extremes. Right. So when he does get a little extreme with it, like his weird, once in a while he'll do something weird, people can't figure it out. They don't know what to make of it because it's so not Spielberg. I'm not saying that's great or if that's good or whatever it is or what the whole of his work will look like 20 years from now. I just know
that it looked fantastic.
It's always landed on me just fine to have people survive, to have Marion shut her eyes, to have everyone else melt like candles and have that thing put in a freaking, put in a safe by top men. That's all fine with me.
That was a great ending. Best ending.
I have a question. And I'm going to direct it at Brian Ibbett again because he's been run over.
Thank you, Randy.
What's all the body horror doing in this movie?
Body horror?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Explain.
There's so much of it. There's eyeballs getting pulled out and other balls standing in for eyeballs. And there's the whole scene where he's all, wrapped up in rags and there's spiders that grab onto you and, stare into your eyes and whatever. Like, it just seemed like out of place to me. And
I felt like Philip K. Dick to me.
Sure.
The rest of the movie
didn't feel like Philip K. Dick. So, like, I'm trying to figure that out.
I mean, if we threw out the Blade Runner a little bit earlier, and I think there's some parallels that you can draw between the style of the two movies. Definitely the film noir kind of style that Blade Runner, I think, succeeds in, and this one doesn't necessarily succeed in. But if you look at the gore in Blade Runner, it's the same kind of thing. I mean, there's eyeballs, getting poked around in that one too.
Mm-hmm.
Loose in a jar. I didn't think that it was actually terribly excessive.
It's the kind of movie that made you feel like it was super graphic when it really wasn't. They had a sex scene with zero nudity. But it was still felt really raw and like, whoa, what are you doing here? Those creature things that were rolling, little spider guys you're talking about. That stuff seemed harsh and holding your breath for that long. Jumping from car to car on the future freeway seemed really intense. And
by the way, no wind whatsoever in the future. Whatever. Go ahead.
Sometimes body horror is about acting and presentation and not necessarily about flesh. Like the way the precogs were always twitching, the way the people who were put in Halo jail were kind of stuck.
Yeah.
Like there were body horror elements there that didn't go all the way through to body horror, but man, that scene
right up on the edge though.
That scene, that whole sequence where he gets his eyes removed, which again could have been 40 minutes less. It just struck me as too intense for the film, and I found myself thinking about it way more than I wanted to as the rest of the movie was carrying on, you know?
Yeah.
I actually thought that the build up and the tension that they put into this movie was really good, I think, because like you said, the body horror with the eye scene. Of course, a lot of people have phobias about losing their eyes and that type of thing. And of course, they wanted to say some things too about seeing and not seeing and balls. Anyway,
balls. This movie's so full of balls.
So but I actually thought it was very effective because you instantly drug Tom Cruise right away by the doctor, and so you already feel vulnerable. And then the doctor, you know, he increases your worry for Tom Cruise by going, "Oh, we have a past, you put me away."
Right.
Yeah, and so it says
great things like I could sew a dead cat in your chest.
So I have no complaints about the length or what was involved in that scene.
I had no problem. His assistant's taking a crap. She doesn't know English.
She's got a
big mole in her face.
Yeah, she doesn't. She's got for some reason a perfect sandwich sitting right next to a terrible sandwich. I'm like, all that stuff is great. Like this, I think that it's my favorite kind of sci-fi is dystopian. This sort of thing, Blade Runner, others are good examples, but these two jump out at me as those kinds of movies. And there's something about people in the future who are somehow used to
the gore,
the proximity to each other, the over industrialization of everything. There's not a green plant to be left, and somehow they're kind of used to it. There's a creep factor to all that that I don't know. I kind of thrive on it. It's weird.
Right. OSHA, I understand. OSHA, by the way. OSHA does not exist in the future at the car manufacturing plant, apparently.
Well,
no safety.
You're not supposed to kick your window out, I guess. Then,
I mean, I'm talking about the actual plant where they're assembling cars because the robot's just going full storm.
Oh, yeah.
Going to put a seat on you.
I love that stuff. I thought that stuff was really good. And you cannot deny that stuff, which, you know, you may want to make fun of now or whatever, but he's got his gloves on and he's moving this stuff around. That stuff is hugely influential when it comes to the progress of user interface, the way we might interact with things in the future. There are countless examples of people who innovate in that field capacitive touchscreens or wherever. And you ask those people if that was a factor and they all say, yes, it inspires you. It's like Star Trek or anything else. You see something that's like, oh no, that's some forward thinking stuff there. And remember when this movie came out, nobody else was doing that.
Spielberg actually did some research into this, and this is what he wanted. He wanted something that was accurate to the future. So he did incorporate scientists into the research of, you know, and technical people into looking at what the future would be like. The problem is, I think he was so enamored with that he actually tried to explain it like so hard during this movie. It's like, we got to explain every technology. I'm like, just shut up. I don't care about the explanation. Just let it be.
I'm surprised nobody has fought with me on those balls more than they have.
Well, the balls, I think, are just...
Because I don't have a problem with the balls. It makes perfect sense. It's like, we need fingerprint-level uniqueness.
Okay, but why do they have to come rolling down some kind of Rube Goldberg machine? Why do they got to come down tubes?
I have an explanation for that.
All right.
Because you need all that time for the shellac to dry.
Okay, yeah, see?
The shellac. The
shellac. Brian's right. I'm going with Brian on this.
Yeah.
And speaking of, who had the hamster habitat with the...
I had Habitrail.
Yeah. Anybody else?
No.
Yeah, of course.
What?
I had all my own weird thing made up with like vacuum tubes and stuff.
I've heard the story about that.
No, I did, but I made most of that myself. Like I went and bought vacuum tubes and we created our own custom thing in this room. It was awesome until the gerbils started figuring out where to chew through, and then it was a nightmare. Right.
That's because you didn't think.
Yeah, I didn't think ahead. I look back at movies and say, okay, which ones really got your imagination flowing in science fiction or fantasy or whatever? This movie's in there, man. It's in there for me.
I can see that, but there was a lot of eye rolling moments, literally when the eyes were rolling down the, down to the grate.
Yeah, but give me a real eye rolling moment though. Give me one.
All right. That's probably the most memorable one is the one where the eyes do roll away and he comes back and the people haven't even changed the eye codes.
Even, like, hit a button to say, okay, don't let Tom Cruise don't back.
Let Tom Cruise and back I admitted in, that man. Earlier in this episode. I said, yes, that's a stupid thing. And they surely somebody would have thought to do that.
Wouldn't even have to think to it. Should be automatic. I mean, we got spiders that can go into people's houses and figure out when somebody's hiding in a tub. You telling me it can't automatically go, John Anton's bad. He's out. Yeah. He had the balls roll down. He sucks.
Yeah.
It's
a goofy choice.
Name on a ball.
There were other things. Like, I rolled my eyes at the fact that a character was named Iris.
Who was?
There was
that the girl? Who was Iris? She the precog?
No. That was Agatha.
Agatha. Who is Iris?
Lois Smith, the greenhouse lady.
Oh, her name was Iris.
The creator. Yeah. Creator lady.
And so many things like that. Like, there was if you look through the characters list, there's another one named Van Eyck. Like, there's just a lot of references to eyes because it's a movie about seeing the future, right? Ultimately.
Exactly.
But why is that bad?
I have a problem.
Why is any of this bad?
Poor Scott Johnson.
No, I'm being serious when I ask that question.
I'm going to tell you, I had a problem with the symbolism in this movie because it never went anywhere.
Which symbolism?
The water. What did the water mean? There was reference
to anything.
Water. Constantly.
When?
It was always.
What water?
Let's see. The precogs are in water. The boy was lost when he was under the water.
People drink water. Rain is water.
No. The lady was drowned. Every big defining moment, every big giant scene had water involved, including when Tom Cruise lost his son, the precogs, the drowning, the lady got. I mean, it's just.
But it was like, what did you hope to gain? Water is such a primal element for human beings to deal with. I don't think they were trying to say anything about water.
It was very prominent.
Chekhov symbolism, though, because ultimately you're expecting something to get in the water and change.
The precogs are now surrounded by water. They're on an island.
They're on an island. She lives at a lake house. I mean, come on. There was intentional. Okay, let's
put it this way. We're like 67% water human beings. I don't know if you know.
Right. Okay, all right. Here, Scott. Look at this now. In a mystery, you want misdirection. That's what you want. There was just too much false misdirection and no.
But you don't want Chekhov's gun. You don't want that nice gift to be given to Max von Sydow and then nothing happens to it. You would question, like, why did you take the time to show me that thing and then you never did anything with it? And that's kind of what you're getting at, that there's a lot of unnecessary symbolism that just doesn't ever get a payoff.
I don't think the water was ever a symbol. I think this is you reaching because the water thing, nobody ever came out. There was never a moment where you're like, oh. So much water. What? There's got to be a big payoff of the water at the end. Not once have I ever thought about the water until tonight.
If I am reaching and I am reading other people looking into the symbolism of the movie and no one can find a connection, then you're a poor storyteller because you are creating dots where there are none. So you got to be clearer. It's just not clear.
But I know people who think the Illuminati are living in the dumpster down the block. It doesn't mean they are.
That is not a movie. A movie is a very direct path.
I understand that. I think the water thing didn't actually, I think water is just a great thing to drown people in. And to have floating brains in because computers, you know, kind of water cooled computing really is all that reminded me of is having them in there. Because, like, where are you going to keep them? In this nutrient rich milk, they call it. So they survive and don't have
with
to.
With a toilet. Yeah, which is a giant toilet. Like a toilet. Randy said.
I want to challenge Scott. If this movie had fire in every place where there was water, you would have noticed.
I would have done that in real life, though. Because
why
here
is there so much fire
in my real world.
Oh my God, the precogs are laying in fire.
I have two water bottles with me right here on the show. I can go inside right over there and pee in a toilet full of the stuff. There's a lake across the street from me. Oh my gosh, what are they trying to tell me? There's water everywhere.
But Scott, imagine this. Imagine if I was at your house and you said nothing to me, but you put me over to the tub, showed me the water, pointed at the water, then walked out to the lake, pointed at the lake.
No. They didn't do that though.
But they did. That's exactly what
nobody
they did.
Nobody took you around and pointed at it.
They did. That's exactly what you're doing.
They were just
filmmaking.
In it. They were just in it. They were in it because that's what you do. The fire thing doesn't work because there isn't fire constantly around me all the time, but water is everywhere.
Scott. There was a conscious decision in the very first scene to put a loud and clear sprinkler on a lawn. Yes. Okay.
Oh my God, no kidding. Yeah, the first dude was right by a sprinkler.
He got his paper out of the water, Brian.
And he was, and why was she so concerned with him crying? Because she said that like a million times.
Why?
Because
tears are coming and they're water?
Was he a wussy? Was she trying to say he was a wussy? Was she being abusive to him?
This water thing is a bucket of bullshit.
So when he was moving the things around, there were lights on the tips of his fingers. And then there were also lights on the faces of the spiders. Wait. They were looking around for him.
Oh my God. Where else were there lights? Think about it. Dude, the whole movie was lit. I don't know if you noticed. Oh my gosh. Did you know even to see that movie in 2003, they had to put a light at the end of that projector and make it go through to the thing? Holy shit. We've cracked it open. I think this water thing is complete and utter bunk. That was never a thing. And if you held a gun to Spielberg's head in bed and said, dude, tell me, was the water a thing or not? He'd say, no, I swear.
You mean if they held a pair of keys or a flashlight that says what you mean?
All right. But the keys. All right. Can we talk about the keys in E.T. for just a second?
Yes, please.
That at least was this foreshadowing of a dude who you didn't know whose side he was on, who showed up later with the keys. The keys at first are like, oh, big mystery. Later on, here he is, nice, wants to help everybody. He's got keys again. Oh, now we know who he is. All right, the key thing came through. They didn't even bother to let us know that was supposedly, at least symbolically, the kid from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Which is supposedly true. I don't know if that's still the case, or if that's still what anyone says anymore. That was the story I was told when I was younger, is that right. Guy in E.T. was the kid from that. Mm-hmm. But the point is, and he's the narrator of most of Ken Burns' movies. Anyway, that's not the point.
Hey, you know what, Scott? I just did Minority Report, and then I did Water, and then suddenly Google come up with symbolism of water in Minority Report.
Oh, so that must be right. Because the internet this morning told me, says, you won't believe what photos of what celebrities we have breastfeeding.
Buckland from Wikipedia. Buckland notes that co-writer Frank introduced the water theme, so it was...
Of course it was a thing. It was absolutely a thing. It was a conscious decision made to put whatever his fucking name is, Anderton in a tub when he was being chased by the spiders. There was a conscious decision for his best memory of his son to be one where they're in the pool and they go down and try to hold their breath. Like,
yeah, I just all found of those, the same thing.
All those things were conscious decisions about the film, and they don't ever amount to anything. They don't ever have a payoff. That's all that Brian Dunaway is saying.
What payoff do you want?
Well, hold on a second, because the payoff, the tie-in, the theme, the payoff of the theme is that it's two tragic parent-child relationships in the picture. So Agatha and her mom, who's the first thing, and then Anderton, you know, and his son, and they're saying in that article that's the common water element, is that the mom died in water, the precog's in water. John Anderton lost his son while he was submerged. He has to submerge again in the bathtub to keep from getting caught by the spiders.
Okay, so let's say,
I'd say it's a parent-child thing in water, not just a water.
Great. It could be any of those things. It could be none of those things. My point is, what payoff did you want with the water?
I'm so sorry, Scott.
No,
you're just
for
so
real.
Frustrated
no, no, no. It. I'm not at all. Only when you start doing that, I'm asking
if a movie,
you.
If a movie had gone out of its way to have wind blowing through windows and drapes and so forth over and over and over and over, and then didn't end with something like somebody's life being changed by a tornado, or I don't know, it needs some, like it, you would have just gone, oh, well, that was a lot of effort to establish a theme and not do anything with it. That's all Brian is saying about the water and Minority Report.
All right, moving on then, because I think that's hokum majokum, but we'll move on anyway. Let's do some clips. How about that? How about some clips from this movie?
Let's do some clips.
Here's Murder. All right, that's just her saying. Oh, there's some water. Did you hear the water? Holy shit.
Yes.
There's some water.
I never dreamed this would be the episode that would throw Scott over the edge.
It's had nothing has thrown me. You keep saying that is what throws me over the edge.
You're so angry.
I'm not actually angry about the symbolism or any of that. That stuff's interesting to me.
That's fun.
And it's interesting getting to the bottom of it. I just don't think there's a bottom to it. Sometimes there's stuff around just to make it seem like a weird sci-fi world.
Layered, yeah.
Plus the water's gross in that world. And that's interesting in a weird way. It's interesting that the people who are well off are in nice pools with decent chlorination. And everyone else is living in relative kind of brown, mucky squalor. Like that comparison is really interesting. I don't know where the symbols are for that, but All that stuff's fine. That stuff's all good.
What did it mean that, that room 1109 was the case number that Tom was given as well? What does all that mean?
I don't know. I know the part where, so that reminds me of the part where, I can't think of his name now, Justified guy.
Right.
Anyway.
Neil McDonough.
Checks the time on his clock and it says, they said, how much time, so here's the question, how much time do we have? This was, he kidnapped Agatha, Danny Whitwer, Colin Farrell asked, how much time do we have? He asked us to, what's his name? Precog officer responds, 51 minutes, 28 seconds. That is exactly how much time remains until the end of the movie, as well as the end of the credits, or until the credits begin to roll, yes. Like to the second, which is crazy good. Right. I like that kind of weird crap.
It is cool.
But it never paid off. What did that symbolism mean? What did it mean? All right, more of this. Let's see. How about, here's some of the, this is like, if you, it's almost like if you listen to it without the movie, you almost get like that 40s cop drama kind of vibe out of it. And when you hear dialogue like this, that's what you get. So here you go.
The precogs can see a murder 4 days out. Why do they call?
Well, we call it a red ball. With crimes of passion, there's no premeditation, so they show up late. Most of our scrambles are flash events like this one. We rarely see anything with premeditation anymore.
People have gotten the message.
Uh-huh. I like it, dude.
Mm-hmm. I did like that scene, but I kept thinking he was saying Red Bull. Every time he said it, I thought he was saying Red Bull.
Red Bull instead of ball?
Red Bull.
Well, you need to drink a Red Bull in order to go catch him. You need the energy.
That gives the precogs wings.
I think Colin Farrell was fine. I want to say this may have been one of the first times I'd seen him. Yeah,
this is the first time I had seen Colin Farrell, and I remember loving him because he was such a dick. He and with that gum, man, just chewing that gum.
Yeah, I don't like loud gum chewers.
Yeah,
that drives you crazy after a while. But you know, interesting turn for that guy toward the end there.
Right.
You guys ever seen Bruges? Bruges is amazing. You gotta see that movie. Holy crap, that movie's good. What? Sorry.
I'm just trying to remember if this predates Phone Booth. I guess it does.
Yeah, it totally does.
Phone? That's where he was out. That's when Kiefer Sutherland was trying to kill him, right? Sharpshooter.
Yeah.
He was in American Outlaws, but he wasn't that important.
2002. This movie was also. I guess they're both 02 then. Let me make sure about that. Yeah, so roughly the same time. But I don't think anybody really knew who he was yet. Phone Booth, the movie Joel Schumacher was good at.
Right. Was that 2 hours in a phone booth? That was good stuff.
It was really
good.
It was not Batman with nipples.
Right. You forget the same director. Wow.
Here's another clip. This is In the Land of the Blind, something, something. Here you go.
In the Land of the Blind, the one-eyed man is king.
Yeah, more water. Keep it to yourselves.
All right. But let's talk about
overridden with the eye symbolism.
Well,
yeah, in that case,
I guess
in that scene.
Well, I think that also helped establish that people could just take your eyes and sell them for money.
Well, that and he could actually be part of the underground because he was untrackable.
I just like this idea that drugs are so good that Peter Stormare could sneeze into your open eyeball.
That was great scene when he snotted out of there. That was great.
Yeah. I may have clips from that.
So Peter Stormare is charging up the actors list on FilmSack.
Yeah, he is, real quick.
And it's pronounced Peter Stormare, by the way.
Is it?
We have a Swedish listener whose mom knows his mom.
Oh, really?
There's a connection, yeah. Andreas Ekberg, his mom knows Peter Stormare's mom. And anytime we mention him, he says, Brian, it's pronounced. And he sends me a little email to say how it's pronounced to remind me.
So that's your attach a WAV file, or is he like?
Just oh God, no, he's not that good. Okay.
Is that your mom back there in the chipper? Then did you ever say that?
I have not said that.
Hopefully not. All right, how about?
It's kind of amazing. We've already seen him twice before this because we don't typically watch newer movies, and I'm trying to remember what the two are.
I can remember one of them.
Armageddon was one of them.
Armageddon, right? And that one with he was bad guy in that new Schwarzenegger movie. Sheriff one.
So we have seen Armageddon for FilmSack.
No, we haven't. We always think we have.
We've seen Deep Impact.
Same thing.
Deep Rising. We have not.
Those were on two different HBO channels today. I was looking for something earlier
really?
To watch. And Deep Impact and Deep Rising were on two.
Oh, I thought you meant Armageddon and Deep Impact were.
Oh, that would be even better.
You'd almost have to knowingly do that.
Somebody has some some humor over there.
No, we desperately need to see it. It's just we've never have. I wish we have. It does feel like we have, but we
haven't. It's Lockout. Lockout's the other one we've seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He plays the secretary of something.
Yeah.
To the president or whatever. Yeah, he's good.
Secretary of Russia.
I think there's more than that. I just can't put my finger. We didn't do Fargo.
We should go Most
Sacked.
Mm-hmm. He'll probably tell us.
I did, and that's why I know where he was into, and figured him out. Yeah.
All right, here's more information on how time works in this place.
Why'd you catch that? Because it was going to fall.
You're certain?
Yeah, but it didn't fall. You caught it. The fact that you prevented it from happening doesn't change the fact that it was going to happen.
See, I really like that talk.
You can hear that gum chewing, though, all the way through that scene.
That's true. That's true. He was into his gum. But that's a cool... that's a cool example, and it's based on some old thing, too. Like, they didn't invent this.
Old cop drama dialogue banter back and forth.
Right, but the whole idea of you stopped it, but it was inevitably going to fall, so what is the difference between us doing that with these crimes we know are going to happen is such a great argument. That turned out to be, there's nuance and there's more nuance than they thought. It's these thought experiments, I think, that makes the movie work for me now that I think about it.
Right.
Like it's more about that for me than it is any of these.
I enjoyed it all the way up until about, I think the first jetpack fight, I think, was the part that really, that kind of got to me.
The jetpack fight.
Oh, I liked it. Just not in my serious thinking movie because I'm sitting here, I'm in serious thinking mode. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get this. Okay. You got symbolism going on. You know, we got a crime drama we got to solve. Okay, we got this. What are they doing? Jetpacks?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
Poking
with
each other with puke sticks, man.
This was not the movie I thought it was going to be.
All right. Oh, brother, where art him is what I wrote here. So there you go.
The music relaxes the prisoners. Say, I don't ever see any of you pre-cops down here. I'm not in trouble, am I?
Making my breakfast over here in my little weird organ area.
My organ. I love the organ.
Yeah.
We thought you was a toad.
Oh, I love that movie.
One of them sirens loved him and turned him into a toad.
Sirens.
Oh man.
Right, that was a good movie.
Any of you boys need a smithy? Oh, my gosh. I could watch that movie now.
Now. I'm a Dapper Dan man.
Yeah.
There was a lot of water in that movie.
So good.
Isn't this a geographical oddity? 2 weeks from anywhere.
Pa, there's a man from the government bringing papers. I just want to watch it.
Is you ain't my constituency.
What a movie that is. All right. Max Van Sydow doing this right here. Here we go.
I think we have found a cure for the common cold.
All right. That's fine and all, but then there's this. I'm just going to keep that forever.
What was the point behind him being sick?
It's one of those
sick
scenes where usually they have him hold up a hanky to his mouth and he pulls it away and he's got blood on it and he tries to hide it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. No, that's Brian, actually, there is no symbolism with with him being sick.
Well, there was a lot of sick people in this movie.
But there was no symbolism.
A lot of hankies in this movie.
There's sick people outside. There's sick people in this movie. There's sick people everywhere.
You could have put a trope alert on that, man. I am so tired of the vague symptom that is the hacky cough. What are all these? Does tuberculosis make a comeback in the future? What is everybody dying of?
Yeah, if you look, if Peter Stormata can freaking sew a dead cat in my chest cavity and not have me get sick, then they ought not to have this guy get sick. I'll give you that one. If that's the truth, if he speaks true, then I'm with you there. All right, how about this one? Something about being buggered.
You better drink this. Soon you won't be able to swallow, and then you'll be totally buggered.
She's awesome. She's great. I really don't like her plants, though. That's the most Spielbergian moment in the movie for me.
I actually enjoyed it because it, I don't know, I enjoyed it. I thought it kind of added a element of nature inside of a very cold, sterile movie.
Yeah, but they weren't very natural. They were like psycho plants.
No, it was psycho.
And they're kissing her and then trying to bite him. And
she's crazy.
She'd be crazy. That was some pretty good acting on Tom Cruise's part, though. I mean, his reactions to the plants.
Oh, the stinging or the whatever?
Yeah. He was like,
Yeah, he didn't like that.
You didn't like that?
I thought that was the best scene in the movie. I just want to say that again.
Yeah.
Because she's crazy. He's trying to figure things out without freaking her. He knows she can kill him at any time with just mind or something.
Yeah. It's a great love story.
You know, she plants a big, huge kiss right on the lips, and he just goes with it a little bit. You know?
He does it like, hey, whoa.
Grandpa, what are you doing?
All right. Sometimes they Disagree.
Most of the time, all three precognitives will see an event in the same way, but once in a while, one of them will see things differently than the other two.
I like these kinds of things. It's like starting to unravel, starting to peel back that onion.
I was hoping they would say Minority Report one more time in that scene, though. That was the only thing that was kind of getting to me.
Oh, man. They said it so many times.
There was a lot, yeah. So that doubles as our capture of somebody saying the name of their movie in their movie. Here's Peter blowing his nose. Here you go. All right. We'll just hang on to that one. Wow. Oh, gosh. That's so great. Foul, dude. All right. Enough of that. We may never have to hear that again. Here's another, we don't need to worry.
Don't worry. You see, I could cut open your chest and sew a dead cat in there. You would never get an infection. Not with the spectrum of antibodies I'll be shooting into you.
Oh, man. All right. Don't eat that. That's just your lesson not to eat that sandwich or that brown milk that was in the fridge.
Do you love that? So they established that this was not the first surgery that he'd had by having the old stuff in there. But boy, Tom Cruise was having no luck that day. He was grabbing all the bad stuff.
If it was a mousetrap on the floor, he would have stepped on it. Yeah.
I'm surprised there wasn't. And let's just talk a little bit about the humor in this movie. There were a couple of moments of comic relief. The one where he's got his new eyes and he gets recognized by a billboard, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, welcome back to the Gap, Mr. Tomodachi or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
This one, they're all really like dark. It doesn't like there's no really like a mousetrap would have been better in my opinion. I would have liked a little bit of like him opening that fridge and I'm all, oh wow, Peter Stormata really hates him, like hates his guts, like why didn't you just kill him while he was sedated?
I tried to figure that out. Was he trying to get some revenge? Was he redeamed? Was he, you know, was it just he was negligent? That was the whole reason why, you know, he got
a little of both.
Yeah.
I think he had a little, he would have been pleased by seeing him eat the wrong sandwich. But I mean, the way we were presented it, I don't think it was presented so much as humor as it was an attempt to just have us all squirm in our seat and go, oh no, he's going to eat that. Oh, don't eat the green one.
No.
Cause that's gross. I mean, that's freaking hideous.
How old does milk have to be to turn green? I don't think I've ever had milk long enough that it turned green.
Oh my gosh, dude. Can you imagine? That's got to be months,
years. I know it. Yeah, I know it curdles. That's not a problem.
No. Well, it's still a problem, but.
Yeah. Right.
The time I came in from a hot run with a dog when I was like, I don't know, 15, 16, come running into the house, crack open the fridge, go right for the milk. I don't even pay attention. I just down a big gulp of it and it comes out in freaking chunks right down my throat. Worst thing in the history of ever.
It's like getting stabbed in the neck with a six stick is going to make you.
That's not good. All right. Here's a great. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I skipped ahead there. Let's see. Is this it? No, don't eat that. Okay. Here it is. Miranda writes like you've never heard them before.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say or do can be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney.
I actually really like that scene.
That was best acting.
Tom Cruise does. He's a good actor, man.
He's a great actor.
Everyone gives him so much shit for jumping on a couch, but I think he's fine.
He would just run less.
If you got it, use it. Just
I mean, yeah, you got it, but I mean, it's becoming a joke, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, saying he'll be back in every movie. As Tom Cruise is karate chop running every movie, he's just like, oh, full speed.
Yeah, that's true. Well, if the movie's an action movie and he's going to be in it, there'll be a scene where he has to run, and probably if you compare that up to other movies, they're all running too. It's just we're used to seeing him do it, I guess. I don't know.
Can we talk about our favorite Tom Cruise running moment ever? Yeah, I think Mission Impossible. I think when he runs away from the fish tank exploding.
Which
we
one?
Saw that
two,
movie.
One, one.
The first one. Yeah. The first one where he throws the lasagna gum onto the thing. Don't get any on you. Mm-hmm. Right. And then he takes off and they do that crane shot where they kind of back away from him while he's running down the street with the waterfall on him. That's great.
His full bore run in Mission Impossible 3 when he was in China was pretty good.
Right.
I can't think of one where it's the most iconic though.
The iconic one for me is Collateral when he's coming down the escalators.
Yeah, and that suit.
Yep.
tight freaking suit.
He's got that steel gray hair.
Yeah. That movie all looked, that was weird too, because that was like Michael Mann's first real attempt at all digital footage and it was all shot at night pretty much and it looked like a video camera to me.
And then the other iconic, if you're thinking about Tom Cruise running, you're thinking about The Firm. because he runs and he runs
all the time in that movie. Oh my god!
And he's always wearing a suit because he has to look like an attorney,
right?
And
right.
It's amazing.
A tie flying.
It's funny when you mention that, I think of Philadelphia, which has no story connection at all. But I just think of Dick lawyers, just lawyers who are dicks. That's what it reminds me of.
Right.
Here's a great scene. Here's a great scene.
Do you know what I hear? Nothing. No footsteps up the stairs. No hovercraft out the window, and no clickety-click of little spiders. Do you know why I can't hear any of those things, Danny? Because right now, the precogs can't see a thing.
What's the end of that? Well, right. Almost.
I had a little bit. Of trouble with that part because I
why
understood.
Precogs are unhooked. They couldn't see the future.
Precogs are unhooked, but okay, dude. Let's face it. This has not went nationwide, so this is only the police force in Washington. If an outside investigation comes into people being killed after precogs go down, they are going to suspect him and they're going to investigate the crap out of him. So, I mean,
why would they?
All they had was precogs here.
No. They're not. The precogs don't come for, hey, you're a bad guy and you're corrupt. Precogs become specifically because Colin Farrell's being killed.
Right.
That's what he was referring to.
Well, the precogs, well, that's what I'm saying. In Washington, D.C., there is no crime division except for the precog.
Right.
Crime division. Now, in the rest of the country, you've got regular detectives who research murders. So they're not stupid. So they're going to bring in the smart people from outside.
Right, but not before
this.
It happens is the point. That whole line notice how I don't but hear anything coming to stop me. That's the point. Is they're not going to catch him before he commits the old, you know, future
but he
murder.
Thinks he's going to get away with it.
No, I don't think he did. I think he has a better chance of it because he can clean that body up. Who knows where he went? Well, the precogs weren't hooked up. We'll never know. Like, I think there's ways.
How's he clean up anything? He's so sick he can't even hardly stand himself.
actually, I agree with you, Brian Dunaway. The movie has a conceit here that its little bubble that it's in is the only thing. And all movies do.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like just to name another Michael Mann film. Go watch Miami Vice and do yourself a favor and try to not imagine that there are a million other police officers on the planet.
Not everybody is living on a boathouse with alligators. What you're saying?
Yeah.
Like outside of that, gotcha.
Yeah, but all movies have their little bubble, and of course this character is just living in it.
Yeah.
Right.
I liked it. I liked that part. Let's see. Here's this right here. She's saying run.
That was a really cool, effective scene. I mean,
do you know the actress who played the Borg queen in First Contact was almost Agatha.
Right. Oh, really? It was almost bald, both of them.
So was, they almost hired the elf queen lady whose name once again leaves my brain.
Oh, the real elf queen and not
the one from Lord of the Rings.
Not Liv Tyler.
Kate Blanchett was almost almost the precog. Lady.
Helen Mirren?
No. bald running around Kate Blanchett would have been a hell of a precog. I think she would have been just fine.
Bald women in sci-fi always have special superpowers. You ever notice that? Mm-hmm. Always happens.
Yeah, that's a good trope, right?
Interesting thing to me, Samantha Morton won multiple awards for this performance.
Oh, really?
Which I just find kind of weird. It's not much of a performance.
It's not, but what she does is pretty intense. When she is kind of on the ground during the scene in the hotel room and sees that everything has gone wrong, I mean, she's pretty believable. Mm-hmm. She is unsettling in her role. Yeah. So that's probably what won it for.
Which reminds me, we haven't even touched on the Holosuites scene, the entertainment facility with the
clear boss or
the dude who looks like Ted from How I Met Your Mother running it.
Right. true story.
What's his name? It just escaped me.
That guy.
Character name or the actor who played him? I don't know.
The actor. He was really good. I really enjoyed that whole thing, even though
he was very squirmy.
Again, it was kind of like set aside. Like what? What other cool thing could we have them just stumble into? I know.
Right. You brought a precog here?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that whole thing. I like that whole, I was going to say this in the thing. I like a dirty, sleazy, hollow sex place where the guy is like your con. He's your dude on the outside. Like he's one of his crime. What do you call those guys? Detectives always have a
informant.
Yeah,
he's the basement dweller.
I'm a fan of informants. I think those guys are always funny and always good.
Those were huge for a while in movies.
That actor. I'm sorry.
Basement friend was what I always called him. Go ahead, Ibbit.
Jason Antoon is the actor. Mm-hmm. And his IMDb picture looks just like Ted from How I Met Your Mother.
Nice.
That's really weird. All right. That's your clips. And that means that we are launching straight into this. It's your Film Sack checklist, which starts with main actor with a tooth in the middle of his head. Check. Got it. No problem. Check that one off.
I'm not bothered by that. You people.
You just can't not see it. That's all. I'm not bothered by it. It's just so there now. Max von Sydow has a tiny little gun. Check. Sorry, Randy. Yes.
And you just can't stop seeing it because the first scene where he smiles, he's smiling at the hollow image of his son and he's smiling the whole time. And it's a close up of his teeth.
Yeah. It's right there, horrible. Right square in the middle, man.
It's horrible. I think I had nightmares the night after I watched it.
Tom Selleck and Gene Simmons called. They want the robot spiders back. Check.
Yes. I thought the same thing. I kept thinking about those robot spiders.
They were a little better. They weren't sending in a floater this time.
In a floater.
One of the great lines in the history of Film Sack. Let's see here. We got some Star Trek connections. Patrick Kilpatrick, who played Knot, also played Razik on the episode he's the one that got poked in the neck with a six stick, by the way. He was in two Voyager episodes as well as a DS9 episode, playing somebody named Reese. Neil McDonough, of course, keep having him pop up. He played Lieutenant Hawk in the USS Enterprise E. Helmsman in Star Trek First Contact. Keith Campbell, pre-crime cop, was on Enterprise as a stunt double for Scott Bakula.
Oh.
Katie Boyer is the mother, played 01 in the episode 11001001. Sounds like a Bender thing. David Doughty, precog prime service announcer, was on Voyager, played some minor in Flesh and Blood episode. Carolyn Lagerfeld. played Greta Van Eek or Eck in DS9, played Macbar in the episode Tribunal. And finally, Byron J, a precog or pre-crime officer, regular backstreet crew or backstreet boy, background Starfleet crewman in the episodes of Star Trek Enterprise, also portrayed a Starfleet officer in Nemesis. And that is a lot of connections. And they're all accurate.
That is a lot of connections.
Episode of Deep and Space Nine. That was such a
good one. It just happens that since the beginning of the year, we've watched Timeline and Ravenous and now this. We've seen a lot of Neil McDonough. I've been trying to find another Neil McDonough movie just to see what that would be.
Yeah.
And just to top it off.
Yeah. And looking at what's streaming, the only one I can come up with is called Little Birds. And I don't want to have anything to do with it. But Neil McDonough. Neil McDonough seems to be everywhere this year.
Yeah, guy's awesome.
His Cadillac ad, especially. Mm-hmm. That I feel like I've seen that too many times. I don't think that you should play an ad for a car.
He was a high point for me in season 3 of Justified.
Oh, he was so good,
amazing in that. Yep, and by saying was. I'm not spoiling anything, but he's not with us anymore.
Right.
Soundtrack grade, I'd give it a JWISHB for just what it should have been. I think it nailed what it needed to be.
I bought the soundtrack. I watched the movie a few days ago, and I immediately went and got the soundtrack.
Wow. Didn't already have it?
Nope.
All right. Well, there you go then. Emails. No, sorry. Alternate title. This is you guys. No, not that. Twitter post. This is where you guys in 140 characters.
Come up with an alternate title.
Sorry.
I didn't write that down.
140 characters or less. You guys round out this with a Twitter post. Let's start with Randy. How would you do it?
Minority Report. Unnecessary exposition, unnecessary plot devices, unnecessary plot holes, unnecessary rotten food. It really is just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's place.
Oh, take that, Ibbot.
Fine.
Brian Dunaway.
Minority Report. Like having a dead cat sewn up in your chest. It may be exciting for about 2 hours, but you just know it's not going to end well. Negative. Negative.
Nice. Everyone runs, Brian. Everyone gets the run. So that should
negative.
Finally, Brian Ibbett.
If only Brian Dunaway would have gotten... Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to begin with Minority Report. Yeah. If only Brian Dunaway would have gotten the balls to know that he should not have watched this movie.
Gotten
the balls. But do I think you should walk over to the video rental store and watch this? No. I think you should run!
Nicely said.
Good stuff. Good
alternate stuff. Title for this movie just handed to me. Hold on. Where are they? I open that up. First option is worst fridge of all time, or the only good drug comes from a dealer with no eyeballs. And those are your alternates. Vote often and well. Hey, look, emails. We got emails for the show this week, and these come to us via the email address filmsack@gmail.com. I have two of them this week, because next week we're doing a kind of bonus sack commentary thing. So we'll get a couple in this week. This one comes to us from Aka Magosh. Headlingly, well, I'll just use his real name, Dave. Dave sent this in. He says, "Hey there, Sackers. Just a little note to set you straight on Three's Company debate, which came first, meaning the, you know, who, the Ropers versus what's his name and all that.
Right. We're talking about spinoffs last week.
Yeah. The show came up, the show that came up first was Mad About the House, 15th of August, 73. This show was remade by American TV as Three's Company, which was 15th of March, 1977. So,
Another British person telling us that they had the show first. I would not brag about Three's Company.
I wouldn't either. We're not all that proud of it here. We don't think it's great.
Three's Company and Weakest Links. You can have them both back.
It says here, Man About the House spawned two spinoff shows, George and Mildred, 6th of September, and Robin's Nest, 11th of January, 77. So again, there's a comparison. Both of these shows are also made by remade by American TV as The Ropers. 79, and then Three's a Crowd, which was loosely based on Robin's Nest.
God. Three's a Crowd.
Yeah, remember that piece of crap?
Yeah, yes. Remember that? Forgot all about it, but yeah. Good stuff.
So none of them came first. They're all knockoffs of English TV. Love the cast, though. Keep sacking, says Dave. All right.
Thank you, Dave.
Uppity British man.
Thank you, Dave. And I'm kidding. You know, my family's British, so hold on.
Take it easy. Right. Jazzy Rowling.
I can say those words.
Of course you can. You can say buggered or whatever they are all offended by. Jazzy wrote in, says, "Hey again, guys. Hard to believe I've had two compelling reasons to send FilmSack emails in this week. With respect to your discussion on the sped up film or Keystone Cops effect, this conversation from the Killer Tomatoes episode.
Right.
I just got back from 22 Jump Street. Well, thank you, because that'll help. Oh,
I want to see that. Yeah.
And during a car chase scene, the film speeds up in that old fashioned way. I was surprised to see a sped up gag so quickly after listening to your conversation about how that never happens anymore. More surprisingly, when I read the review of 21 Jump Street at avclub.com, I learned that the sped up chase scene takes place in front of the Benjamin Hill Center for Film Studies. Love the show. Jazzy."
Nice.
Oh, interesting. Nice. It's funny that I'm glad that email came up, because it reminded me, I just saw the Grand Budapest, the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
I keep thinking that there's a fourth word in there. But maybe I'm thinking of the Indian one that came out a few years ago with all the old people.
Life Aquatic Cocoon? At the end, yeah.
No, it was like the Great Immaculate Special Hotel or something like that. Anyway.
Yeah,
the Grand Budapest Hotel. And there's a scene in that. And we were even talking about what directors could pull it off. And I had not seen it. And I think I did say Wes Anderson.
You did say Anderson Wes Anderson.
Could pull it off.
Yep.
And sure enough, there's a skiing scene with Willem Dafoe that involves sped up film.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how I like all my Willem Dafoe, if you want the truth.
Sped up, sure.
All sped up. I want to see that movie. How was it?
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
Really enjoyable.
Also, Guardians of the Galaxy is amazing. People should go see it.
I want to see that.
Good.
Yeah. You know, I never did really hit the mini rant on the Star Trek. I know we talked about it.
Give us a mini rant. Go. Failed.
Yeah.
All right. So I want you guys to get involved with it too, because I feel like I can't be the only person that feels this way about the Star Trek Into Darkness. By the way, if you haven't seen it yet, it's on Netflix. Spoiler alerts. Telling you now, turn it off.
I will follow you into any battlefield, my friend. Go for it.
All right. A couple of things that really chap my ass about the Star Trek Into Darkness. First of all, when the first one came out, the first reboot that J.J. Abrams just did, were we not promised a whole new Spock and Kirk adventures? And did we not immediately get this very next movie, Wrath of Khan reboot? Was that not exactly what that was? A Wrath of Khan reboot.
Kind of a Wrath of Khan rewrite, but yeah.
Rewrite, yeah. And you know what was even worse than that? The fact that they switched the roles of Kirk and Spock for the sacrifice. Because I remember when Spock, this is my main gripe about this movie. Was it done well? Yes. Did it look good? Yes. Was it rehashed like nobody's business? Yes. Did they fail? Yes, because the thing I had the most problems with was the ending. Once again, can't forgive a bad ending.
Like how they switched who died?
Like this because it totally devalued it. When Spock died, we all had a question. We all was like, okay, he made a very logical sacrifice, and then that logical sacrifice went on to make a second movie or a third movie with The Search for Spock and a total reboot of the character back to a time where he was a little less emotional.
It was the same,
Kirk's sacrifice was just an idiot running balls first in, just trying to be a cocky son of a bitch. Trying to,
he was
show
trying to save everybody.
He was trying to be a badass, and he was trying.
I don't like this ending either. By the way, I should put that out there. I'm not a huge fan of it.
A piece of equipment.
He kicked it and kicked it. He freaking! Oh my god! He was kicking a stupid thing to get it back into alignment.
Mm-hmm.
Totally idiotic, if you ask me. I hated they reversed those roles. Plus, in the original Wrath of Khan, it was Kirk mostly fighting against Khan, and this one it was mostly Spock. And if you really come down to it, Spock is evenly matched physically with the freaking Cumberbatch. So I'm like, what's the point? What's the freaking point? Because, you know, he's no longer a great threat. And my last final part of that really pissed me off more than anything was that we went to the Klingon home planet and we got to see one Klingon.
Well, there were a few There were a few.
No, not you get they to see. They were all in uniforms.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Only one took his thing off. Yeah,
you got to see freaking one. Why even go to the Klingon home planet if you're going to bring me that crap? And then, almost forgot. Old man Spock literally phoned it in to call in and say
terrible cameo.
Literally
from his Malibu home, called in and said, "I ain't telling you squat." And I'm like, "Why not? How are you going to mess the timeline up? They blew up all of Vulcan." How is telling him how to beat Khan going to change anything? Yeah. It's not.
No, that was bad.
My favorite weirdness in that movie is at some point the Enterprise has been chased down by a death ship commanded by Admiral Marcus, who happens to be the only woman in the movie's father. And they fly over there bodily to board the ship. And of course, they board it and everything goes to hell. Huge ship, really powerful, has chased them all the way across the galaxy. There's three people on it. Admiral Marcus, a security guard who gets knocked out of an air portal, and Montgomery Scott. That's it. That's the only people on the boat. It's really, really weird to me how it's not teeming with people.
Well, to their credit, there were a couple other ladies. You had your nurse, what's her name?
But she wasn't on that ship. They were on the Enterprise.
They were. Yeah. But it wasn't as void of women as some would say.
Space is a very boy
movie. I would say it's a very boy movie. And I would also say that it's not nearly as good as it wanted to be. And it was fine for, like I said, fine for a 2-hour popcorn thrill ride. But then you're done and you're just sort of like, I don't know, it left me with the same taste a lot of the other Star Trek movies do, which is just they tear away all the potential Star Trekiness and just leave you with an action movie with a bunch of cheap shots. And this movie's definitely not.
Oh my God. And the thing I think I remember I screamed at the screen so much during this movie. I remember when Khan was in the little prison area thing, they only had one prison cell and the stupid lady who was monitoring it, she's got her back turned to him. I'm like, surely this is going to come into play. Nothing ever happened.
Chicken in the bucket, dude.
Chicken in the bucket.
Chicken in the bucket. All right. Nicely done. So there's your mini. We promised it. We gave it. We delivered it. Our next episode is a live commentary track that you'll listen to in your earbuds while you watch it.
What?
A viewing of the Dukes of Hazzard episode with an alien in it.
Now, what do we need to know about the Dukes of Hazzard going into this?
They're good old boys.
Yeah. Do they mean harm?
They mean no harm.
Never meaning
any harm. No harm is what they'd say. But
They beat all you ever saw.
They do beat all you ever saw. They're some kind of modern day Robin Hood or something. I can't remember.
Something like that.
No one's ever from the law said nothing but the day they were born.
When they drive a really offensive car.
It's a very offensive car. I'm trying to find the episode name. That would probably be helpful for people. We're going
to... Strange Visitor to Hazzard County.
That's it. Strange Visitor. Now, you're going to say to yourselves, well, where do I get this hair thing?
And you're going to say it to it like you're a character.
Exactly. Like I'm Cooter talking to you at the street corner. So
get him, Flash.
By the way, Cooter, growing up, Cooter from where I lived, that was slang for a vagina.
Yeah.
It still is what you're talking about.
Okay. So when they would say, "Hey, Cooter," I'd go, "Tee hee hee." My mom would go, "What are you doing?" She wouldn't know what I was laughing at. So we're going to, I think the deal is maybe even a couple of us will like upload it to YouTube and just hope it,
we'll tweet a link, see what happens.
There's probably going to be an account called Film Sack is going to get this deleted for sure.
Probably.
Yeah, let's say we don't associate with the word film sack at all.
Yeah, we probably ought to
check
do something
out,
else.
Check out twitter.com/film sack.
Yeah, yeah. Just keep your eye on our Twitter. We want you guys to be able to see it. But we're dying to do this, and it's going to be fun. So watch for that. That's next week, a special episode, a very special episode of Film Sack. In the meantime, if you want to take advantage of us, I guess, some way to put it, you can go to our website and check out the comments, the blog, and all the archives. All that stuff is there. We get very lively comments after episodes. We'd be happy to have you there doing that with us. That's filmsack.com. We can be emailed at filmsack@gmail.com. On Twitter, find us at filmsack. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. Mm-hmm. We'll see you next time.
Negative.
Negative. Everybody runs. Negative.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.